531. The Fafaite, a traditional voyaging canoe, is currently making its way from Tahiti to New Zealand as part of the Tuia 250 voyage. The voyage not only celebrates traditional navigation as used by our Polynesian ancestors, but also will honour and celebrate the life and role of Tupaia, the Tahitian master navigator who assisted James Cook's endeavour. Tupaia's role was so critical in the support of the Endeavour's expedition, yet his role has not been recognised with the prominence it deserves to date. I'm joined now by Lala Rolls, a creator behind the documentary series Tupaia's Endeavour, which aired on Māori TV. For more, kia ora and thank you so much for joining us this morning, Lala.
Kia ora, ni sambula vinaka. I know, that's a weird one. I come from Fiji, so...
Oh, well, there you go. Nisa Yandaravinaka, yeah. And thank you once again for joining us this morning. Well, before we get to the man himself, your interest, Lala, where did your interest come from with regards to Tupaia?
Well, actually, it does come back to coming from Fiji because I came to Aotearoa in the 1980s, arrived in Dunedin and was like, where the frick, where are all the Māori? and I know Māori were well and truly there, but New Zealand felt like little England to me. And so I've always had this thing that New Zealand's part of the Pacific and that's not often celebrated, not often known. So that was one thing. Then the other thing is... the kind of untold stories, the fact that the history is often written by the rulers and the Pākehā in this case, the Palangi. And so Tupaia, when Cook and Banks and them got back to England, they didn't really mention this guy Tupaia much. He was just in the journals, but they were all like, you know, celebrated return to England. And no one said, actually, we wouldn't have made it home probably if we didn't have this guy Tupaia with us. So there was that. And then the other thing was Dame Anne Salmond wrote a book, Trial of the Cannibal Dogs, and I read it. It was about Cook's arrival in the Pacific. I've always been interested in looking from our shores at the people coming here and what that was all about. So, yeah, so I read that book and saw Tupaia in between all the lines, then bumped into my friend Michael Tuffery, the artist. You know, he's a Samoan, Rarotongan, Tahitian artist. And said, hey, Tuss, I just read this book. What about this guy Tupaia? And he said, wow, I just read the same book. And I never read books, but I read that one. And we should do a film. So I said, sure. So then we did.
Very good. So, Lala, when we're talking about this man, Tupaia, talk to me about who he was and what he did prior to joining Captain Cook on his travels, on his journeys.
Cool. So, well, what I really like about Tupaia is he's kind of a conduit, like a way to understand that in the Pacific before Europeans arrived, there were thriving societies and people were had complex and interesting lives. Like I think that's often not talked about in history books. So when Cook and them arrived in Tahiti, where Tupaia's from. He was there as an arioi, a high priest and an arioi. And the arioi were a group of people who worshipped the god Oro, who was the god of war and fertility. But also they were a group of intellectuals. It was like they were like travelling. You know how Shakespeare's day in England, they used to have travelling players who would go from town to town and do plays and tell stories and pass news on. The arioi sort of did that. They'd arrive island to island and bring stories with them and bring the cult of Oro and talk about their god Oro. But they also danced and sang and boxed. And also they had a school where it was like a university at Tapu Tapu Atia in Raiatia, which was considered Hawaiki and the training, you know, the centre of Polynesian navigation for some. Anyway, so he trained there, trained at Tapu Tapu Atia and became a master navigator, master storyteller, obviously, because he told a lot of stories, spun a lot of yarns. And he was just incredibly bright. He had travelled a lot and was really clever with the linguistics. So when the Brits first arrived, he was really quick to pick up the language. And started being the one to try and control the situation and keep things calm and communicate between Tahitian and European. So he's solidified himself in that role, so that when Cook was leaving, Joseph Banks on Cook's boat was asking him to go with him, because they had realised, like Cook said, he's the most intelligent man we have met. He knows so much about the religion and culture of these islands. So, yeah.
Lala, what do you think prompted Tupaia to join Captain Cook on his journeys, on his travels?
It's interesting, because we feel that he probably thought about it really hard, because Joseph Banks writes in his journal 2 days before they left, Joseph Banks writes, "Today Tupaia has agreed to come with us." So you, by that sentence, you realise it's not he was going, yay, let me come. It was more like they were going, will you come with us? But one of his descendants in Tahiti said he was known to be really adventurous and he was always looking to find out more. And another guy in Tahiti said to us that he feels like prophecies had been made on Tupaia's marae about things were going to change, people on a canoe without an outrigger were going to arrive and everything would change and the culture would get lost. So he thinks, in a way, Tupaia wanted to understand what was coming, who these people were, and how to how his people could work with this and therefore stay afloat themselves, you know, not be sort of taken over. So those are three kind of thoughts on it. Some of the Pākehā scholars have written that they thought he wanted to go and get guns so that he could come and retaliate against an island, Bora Bora, that had attacked his home marae and devastated it some years previously, like 7 years previously. But me and Tufts kind of were like, except when we talk to people in Tahiti, it turns out that the people attacked him strongly from Bora Bora because he actually had a lot of lineage there and could put the, you know, so he had relatives there. So not so sure he was going to really want to attack the hell out of them. Anyway, so, you know, it's complicated.
Yes.
But they could be right. Maybe he did. And I'm sure he did want to understand the technology of guns and see what he could discover in Europe too.
Lala, when we're talking about the journeys of Captain Cook, and as you mentioned earlier, the historians or colonisers in their history version not really paying due diligence to just how important, and this is something that I want to touch on with you, just how important, how significant was the role of Tupaia in the travels, the journey, the voyages of a Captain Cook, especially around New Zealand. And I did actually watch the documentary series, one particular incident, how he was a peacemaker in one of the first interactions with local Māori.
Yeah, totally. So Cook made a massive mistake. On his first day of arrival in New Zealand, he left Tupaia on the boat, mistake number one. Then him and Banks and them went up the river at Turanganui Akiwa. They went up the Turanganui River and started just looking around in people's houses. No one was there. It was a little fishing village, so the fishing people were probably out at sea or hiding to see who these other people were. But a high chief, Te Maro, from the Ngāti Onione side of the river, his people would have watched all what was going on and seen these strangers landing on the very same place that their ancestors had landed. So their descendant tells us they would have been going, right, okay, landing where we first landed, strange ships, strange looking creatures, funny costumes, you know. So they just simply the chief and three attendants went down to lay down a wero and say, so, you know, who are you, where are you, friends or enemies? Let's work this out. And so they peacefully went down. But because Cook and Banks were away, the little ship's boys, the little 12-year-old boys who help on the ship, were there with just one coxswain, a grown-up who had a gun, a grown-up soldier guy with a gun. And, you know, these Māori, full Māori approach in a ceremonial way. So they've got their taiaha with them, but not wanting to throw them, you know, doing that approach that you do. And they freaked out. The boys screamed and said, quick, you know, dangerous natives coming. And the coxswain, not realising that Māori had never heard guns before, fired a warning shot with the gun. And Anne Salmon says, you know, for Māori, that would have been just a thunderous noise. That would have been like, whoa, are these people Atua? You know, are they gods? And then, so they kept walking forward, but just a little bit more cautiously. And so the coxswain fired the gun a second time. They still kept walking forward because they're like, okay, we've got to come forward with our wero, and this is this person's way or this god's way or whatever of speaking to us. Kept coming forward. And so the coxswain went, oh, shit, they're attacking us. They're not running away or stopping. So he shot straight through Te Māra's heart. So bam, dead. So, I mean, can you imagine? Never heard a gun, never seen someone killed from a distance, and suddenly the stranger arrives and this weird thing happens. So, yeah, so Tupaia wasn't there. So, and if he had been there, he would have been able to say to the Brits, hang on a minute, hold it. We're going to try and talk to this person. This is a typical Polynesian approach, you know. Anyway, so that happened the first day, and the second day, so Cook and them came running back, realised what happened, went back to the boat. Second day, they come ashore again, and of course, Māori have seen all this stuff happen, and they're like, okay, we're going to, you know, gather and attack these terrible creatures who can kill from a distance like that. So I'm sure they knew they were people. People say they called them goblins and stuff, but, you know, they would have figured it pretty quickly. But, you know, the other thing to remember that in those days for both Polynesians and Brits, the beliefs in gods and creatures and ghosts and things were quite sort of normal in an everyday way as well. Shall I stop and let you talk? I just keep talking.
No, just to touch quickly, once again, just the importance of Tupaia, because he was an interpreter on the, you know, on the voyage around New Zealand wherever Captain Cook stopped. And that amazes me because we're going back a couple, you know, 100 years, and, you know, this man from Tahiti but was able to converse freely with locals.
Totally. Yeah, you're so onto it. So that is the whole point. I'm sorry I went on so long. So basically, second day they come, a huge haka has amassed, and then Tupaia, having been brought ashore this time, steps out and starts to orate in Tahitian across the river. They're across a really wide river, shouting at each other. The haka guys and Cook and them are on the other side of the river. Tupaia starts shouting across the river, and of course, he's been hearing the haka, he's been hearing the language, and he's like, yeah, they're definitely one, they're me, they're my relatives too. And he had known that he had relatives that had travelled towards Aotearoa. You know, voyages had come back and forth, but it had been a 200-year gap since voyages. But Tupaia had all that history because, of course, in his training, he got given all the whakapapa to everything like that. So he started talking, and then suddenly that completely, from that moment on, things changed because Tupaia and Māori started to communicate, and anywhere they went after that, if Tupaia was there and if he could get in time before weird things happened with guns and British people overreacting, he could calm the situation down and sort things out. So basically, we turn that if he hadn't been there that haka day, very likely Cook would have lost many men. Many Māori would have died because of guns, but many, they would have kept coming, and many Europeans would have died, and maybe even Cook himself, you know, because there were hundreds of them. And, you know, Cook and them, I think they were in the 20s and the others were in the hundreds.
Yes.
So.
Just quickly, I'm sorry, because you know our time is short. But Alala, you know, can you talk to me about Tupaia's final years briefly? And also, I understand that the documentary series, but you are now looking at a feature length film on the life of Tupaia. That's so exciting.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. The journey of making this film has just about killed me and not killed me. It's been wonderful, but really long. We started in 2011 filming it, me and Michael Tuffery and Kirk Torrance, you know, the actor Kirk Māori guy, was an outrageous fortune, but he's Ngāti Kaha Nunu, which have a strong link to Te Papa as well. Anyway, him and Michael Tuffery and me have been filming this bloody thing, excuse my language, for a very long time. And we always wanted to make the feature film, but what we, you know, thanks to Māori TV, we got some funding and we made a mini-series for them, which is kind of a good way of really exploring some of the Māori stories. But the feature film tells the story more wholly of Tupaia's own journey on the boat and tells Michael Tuffery's journey with this a bit more as well. And so please, if you haven't seen the film, don't watch the miniseries, wait for the feature because it's going to come out in October. And we're really excited about it. We've got beautiful sound mix and beautiful, Michael's done a whole lot more art. As far as Tupaia's journey goes, he basically was on the boat the whole way. But then when they got to Indonesia, Cook lost like 26 men. Having kept all these people alive all this time, the city in Indonesia was so full of malaria and diseases because they had open sewers that the Dutch had built there. So they were almost home, and suddenly all these people got sick. And amongst those that got sick was Tupaia and his acolyte, his young boy in training to be an arioi. They both got sick with the diseases and died there. So we've done a sort of kawemātea, you know, a kind of bringing his spirit back and, you know, to trying to sort of send his spirit home and honour him by in the making of this film.